This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes. Good morning. This day, it feels like this week just started, man. What the hell?
Are you complaining?
No. In the words of Gwede Mantashe, because now he's what, Minister of Mineral Resources?
It's hard to keep up.
Yeah, it's very hard to keep up.
It's even harder to care.
Yeah. Spot on. Oh, the politicians hate it when we don't care. Huh? They'd rather we hated them than we didn't care about them. They're like kids who are constantly looking for your attention. And the best thing you can do for a kid who's looking for your attention is to just ignore them.
Just throw things at them.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody. Well, it's Thursday. What's happening in the world? We'll check in with Mubs in a moment or two. We'll see what's going on in... you know what? I tried to get hold of Professor David Block. Because he met Stephen Hawking and he introduced him to Madiba when he came to South Africa.
Oh.
Yeah, so Prof. David Block and some other scientists met with Madiba in, I think it was the late 90s, and Stephen Hawking was among them, and it was quite a big deal for Stephen Hawking. It was quite a big deal for Prof. Block, and there are a couple of pictures he sent me. I was going to talk to him this morning, but he's... Let me read exactly what he said.
Well, where is he? Let's begin there.
Well, let's start with that. So I said to him, Prof, we'd love to hear what you have to say about Professor Hawking. Would you pay tribute to him? Blah, blah, blah. So he goes, hi, Gareth. I'm in the Arctic Circle.
Oh, my gosh.
Leading a group of 32 specialists here. Could we do a tribute when I get back on March 22nd?
He is in charge of the Kingsmen, isn't he?
Nearly minus 20 as I type at the midnight hour. Ooh. So I said to him, sure, Prof. And then he said, one of the greatest minds of all time. I'd be greatly honored to do a tribute to him when I get back. We're 20 degrees from the North Pole.
Wow.
Does he have an interesting dude? I mean, what a life, huh?
Yeah. It.
I just love him. I just love scientists.
Wow.
I've been spending a lot of time around scientists lately because I must talk to you. Just remind me in the next... couple of minutes, I've got to tell you about this CRISPR thing I've been reading about.
CRISPR.
Okay. CRISPR, all right. Make a note of that. But I've always wanted to have my own lab.
Mm-hmm. Didn't you have a makeshift one as a child?
I did. I had a countertop. Underneath it were, shame, some clothes that suffered terribly as a result of chemical spills. But I'm a frustrated inorganic chemist, and all my life I've carried this thrill, this delight about chemistry, which is so nerdy you can only share it with a certain number of people, because the rest of them will look at you askance and say, ah, what are you making? Are you running a meth lab? I say, no, inorganic chemistry. And they just look at you as this. You can't explain it to people who don't care about it, and they don't care about it.
It's so true. Like,
it's boring for them.
Yeah, it is the hardest in the grasp.
It's like for you trying to explain golf to me.
Well, it's easier, but yeah, okay, let's have first.
Well, at least golf's a little more mainstream than chemistry. Mabali would understand.
Yeah, I mean, look, the periodic table straight away says to morons, this is, you don't go any further than this.
Gee, I love that periodic table. It's etched into my memory. I can draw it from memory.
Yeah, you can.
I know the name of every single element. I know its symbol. I know its compounds. Mm. I know its electronegativity. It's which valence electrons it has. I love this stuff, and there's nowhere for me to do this in my normal job.
Well, you could always make a podcast around it, Gareth.
Yeah.
Maybe I could, huh? Do you think people would listen?
I think it would be fantastic.
Do you think anyone would care about chemistry podcasts?
No, not the slightest, but because it's you doing it and it's unexpected, it would be a hit.
Well, last year I did.
It would be like, imagine Sia doing just a show on reviewing rump steak. He would be so bad at it, but it would be so entertaining.
I have no words.
Yeah, I don't know that there are that many people who would care. I'd give it a go. If anyone's interested, I'll do it.
It would be entertaining.
But then I've got to do YouTube videos with it. You see the experiments. And that's the excitement of chemistry. I mean, there are about 30 experiments that come to mind now that are just fascinating to watch, no matter how many times you've seen them. Like this iodine clock experiment where a clear, colorless solution in a beaker, you leave it on a counter and you've added all the chemicals and it takes a while for the reaction to kick in. And then suddenly, like that, it just all goes black.
See, this
it's just, yeah, it's phenomenal to see.
This would be a good show, and the three of us would be your audience.
No, I think you'd, I think you'd all leave. You'd
but exactly, we'd get bored, we'd ask a couple of questions.
But I'll tell you what isn't boring is these dangerous chemicals. Like, you get you get a lot of chemicals that are really, really health risk. They're flammable.
And you
have
massively them in
your house? Reactive.
Oh, jeez.
Well, no, I've got to be very careful because...
This is coming from a guy who stood up into a sword once. So...
Yeah, I was busy unplugging something and there was a sword hanging
there.
On the wall.
So, of course.
So when you speak of dangerous chemicals, I just think of Carl.
Well, when I was at high school, right, I sort of made friends with the laboratory assistant at the school because I wanted her to help me so that I could... I really was just really curious to learn. It wasn't like I was trying to do anything dangerous or illegal or... life-threatening or any of that stuff. What I was interested in is the actual chemistry. So I made friends with her, and she'd sort of help me out. And after school, I'd say, can I stay for an hour? And then, you know, she'd show me around, and we'd go into the storerooms, and she'd let me experiment. Obviously, the teachers knew about it, so it was all above board. But, man, I loved this stuff. And then I did have a little lab at home. My parents had to sign forms for... When the stuff was delivered, I mean, it wasn't a lot. It was, there were maybe about 20, 30 different kinds of chemicals.
Because where do you buy these chemicals?
I mean, it's the same place that supplies, you know, schools and universities, really. And there are lots of those companies around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I would do these experiments. I mean, it was, if you saw me in high school, you would have thought, what a douchebag.
Why a douchebag?
Well, because, look, maybe it's cooler now, but
why do you have to be so badass about stuff?
In the 90s, who would have wanted to be around some... I mean, most of the guys
Bill
and the
nice
girls...
Wife?
Most of the guys and the girls in high school are interested in each other more than they're interested in organic chemistry. You know what I mean?
But that's always been the case.
Yeah, so I was a little bit of an outsider in that respect because I couldn't wait to get home and do these chemical experiments. I mean, I was such a whiz at balancing equations. And for someone who cannot do mathematics, ordinary arithmetic, I'm useless at it. I was so good at these equations. You could give me pretty much anything and I could figure my way through it in terms of, you know, sort of complex molecular calculations that you'd have to figure out acids and bases and what the titration point was. You know all this stuff, Mubs, because you studied this.
Yeah.
I love that stuff.
Just not, yeah. Just not.
No, I remember some of these terms from the day before an exam when I just crammed. I don't understand
it. I'm not going to go into it because it really will bore a lot of people to death. But I just, the elements of the periodic table are the most fascinating building blocks of nature that you will ever encounter. Everything that exists in the universe is made up of those 100 and, well, now it's getting close to, I mean, they're making all these artificial elements, right? So I learnt up to about 114, but it keeps going. It goes beyond 120 if you believe some of the scientists who are using these massive particle colliders, and they're making elements that do not exist in nature, but were there at the moment of the Big Bang.
So excuse this question because I'm currently listening to a podcast series of these two housewives who are 50 plus and they're talking about redefining their lives at 50. Do you think you'll ever get to a stage, 10 years time, Cliff Central is standing and operating properly and you feel like you could redefine your life and go more into chemistry?
Well, you know what? Here's the problem, right? And I thought about this when I was at high school, and I loved this chemistry. I had the same love affair with architecture. I had the same love affair with history, with music.
It's never too late.
But you can't make a career out of it. Not me. If I started in chemistry now, I'd be so far behind the people who are at the forefront of research that I wouldn't be able to make a meaningful contribution. All I would be doing is catching up on what's already learned.
No, but that's where you're wrong. You would make a huge contribution because you'd be telling people, like, you just I don't know, let's just go with enlightened as the last 5 minutes. You make YouTube videos. There's an entire species of humans that don't even know a 20th of what you know. So you're catching them up there. Those guys at the forefront who make it their life, that's their stratosphere. You could do so much in this level, which is the most important level.
I don't think I can make a difference. I would.
All right, well, let's move on.
No. I'm not being negative about it. I'll do this anyway as part of what I want to know about the world.
Because it's exciting to me.
I'm curious about this stuff. I will never stop being interested in chemistry, but I don't believe it's a career option for me. I don't believe it's a place where I want to work. You know what I mean? It's like architecture. My aunt is an architect. She's brilliant. The only architecture I'm interested in is building buildings I care about. And if you're an architect, you don't get to do that.
You don't want to be commissioned for...
Can you imagine designing parking lots?
Well, you have to build what's needed.
Yeah, imagine you're an engineer and you have to build the same bridge 200 times. I mean, that's not ever going to be the case, but that's not what you want to do if you're interested in engineering.
Sure, 200 bridge salaries. Nice.
Yeah.
Imagine
you're a structural engineer who wants to build skyscrapers and you get stuck in a bridge building engineering business. You know what I mean? Mm. It's not exactly fun. And then you see a lot of stuff that people end up doing that they genuinely love, and they don't mind doing the boring stuff because they get to do the fun stuff as well. And obviously that would be ideal. But I think I'm past the point of that. I mean, my kind of signature career is the one I'm in. And that's fine. I don't feel any kind of misery about that. I'll fit the others in as hobbies. But I do love this stuff. And the point I was getting to is that when I think of someone like Stephen Hawking, whose entire life, and it was meant to be a very short life, was dedicated to science, and how many other scientists looked up to him, what a contribution he made to our understanding of the universe. It just boggles my mind. Because you compare his contribution to the world to just about all the rest of us put together, and we just, you know, we're a drop in the ocean.
We pale by comparison.
Yes.
But then again, you know, not all of us can be great.
No.
But everyone can be of service. That's what Martin Luther King Jr. said.
Oh, okay.
What did he say?
Everyone can be of service. Everyone can be great.
And being of service
is great.
Yeah, but you
see, that was nice for him because he was great.
No.
Yeah.
It's always the great people who say that.
He was making us feel better. Yeah. Just go with it, okay? Right.
I am not ordinary, but you ordinary motherfuckers, you can be of service. That's so horrible. I mean, I know what he means.
That's how I soothe myself at night.
Anyway.
Like, okay.
Oh, so I was reading about CRISPR. Now, this is biology. This has got nothing to do with chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not nothing. Everything's got to do with chemistry when you boil it down. Pun.
Oh. See, you've got to make this child look at you just punning out of nowhere.
So.
It all adds up, Gareth.
CRISPR, I remember hearing about this at South by Southwest 2 years ago. And I think this would have been the third time if I'd gone this year. And there was a woman there called Jennifer Doudna.
Ah, her.
She, Ben, of course, yeah. Ben knows. Mubs, you'll love this stuff.
Like,
because it involves viral and bacterial DNA. This woman was one of the team that discovered that there was a way when you sequence pretty much the DNA of any living creature of using markers in the DNA. Those markers happen to be viral DNA that are stored in the DNA sequence of other animals as a defense mechanism. It's like a memory storage. It's like you saying, all right, I'm better write this down. You know, if something bad happens to you, like you burn your hand in hot water,
mm-hmm.
and you make a mental note: don't put your hand in hot water.
Oh.
So what your DNA does is, if you're a bacterium and you get attacked by a virus, you remember that virus's DNA so that the next time it comes, you can fight it off better. I mean, your brother and sister bacteria have probably been killed by the same virus, but if you manage to make it through once, you save a copy of that virus's DNA so that when it comes again, you can nail it,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you put that into your own DNA. You actually include it in your genome so that your descendants can also use it to fight these viruses.
So the, for lack of a better term, the memory, the thought, or like this defense mechanism.
The actual ID. It's like
passed
it's
down.
Like when you, okay. you check into one of these golf estates and they take your thumbprint and they take your ID and they take your car registration and they take your birth certificate and they take a stool sample. And then they know
who's there. That's
swinging
on command.
That's definitely the swinging estates where the pool samples get taken.
So if a Henry von Breda situation happens, you can say, oh, no, nobody got in here. It had to be Henry von Breda. Right? But more especially, if you live in one of those houses, you feel safer because the people coming in, you can either identify or they can't get in.
So essentially it becomes part of your DNA.
Well, yeah, you take a snapshot of it and you store it in your DNA. Because that's your, if you're a cell, if you're a single-celled organism, you don't have a brain to file these things. And you, the only place you can store information is in your DNA. So you take a little snapshot of the virus, put it into your DNA. Now what CRISPR does is it takes these markers and it can cut out a huge piece of your DNA between the markers.
Okay.
And it can put another piece in. So it's genetic engineering. And we talk about this all the time. But this is the beginning of where we're going to get designer babies, where we're going to be able to bring the woolly mammoth back to life.
Yeah, nice, because it's been a while.
It has. It's been a long time.
Shame Ben has missed the woolly mammoth.
Yeah,
he was around when it first when it first made its way across the Siberian.
Nothing compares.
Steps. Yeah. But can you imagine what this means? Like if we can isolate the gene that is responsible for Alzheimer's.
Wow.
And we can CRISPR it. We can take the marker on this side of it, and marker on that side of it, excise it from a living cell. And put another piece in, and it's apparently very easy to do because if you just put it somewhere in the neighborhood of this CRISPR sort of movement, this swap of genetic material, mm-hmm. it'll grab the good stuff and put that in place of the stuff you've cut out. It's almost like having a little pair of scissors, and your DNA is turned into string, and there's a bad piece of DNA somewhere in the string, and you cut that out, and you make the string reconnect. Or you put another piece in between that you want in there.
And there are no limits to this?
Well,
in terms of modifying DNA, be it
the Chinese are doing. The Chinese are already doing. They're using CRISPR to do embryonic genetic engineering.
But designing babies.
But yep. They're not bringing those babies to life. So they're using a living embryo cell, but then they don't actually fertilize it and let it, I mean, they don't, it's already fertilized, they don't let it mature to adulthood.
Why? Is it a moral thing?
Well, no, they're observing it, and a lot can go wrong still. You know, a lot of the genes won't work. It's like, you know, when you, your computer sometimes has that little beach ball of death.
Yes.
that can happen. God, I was trying to watch a video of Ben's yesterday.
A new beach ball, yeah.
Jesus. To watch this video, I mean, he eventually put it on YouTube, and I got to see it last night, but we sat here at this table. Ben's got two laptops.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of these things have the processing power.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it's me about getting a bigger laptop. Yes, granted, there was lots of gigs of stuff just on it.
It did this thing. It would start, we'd be watching the video, and then it would just freeze. And then he'd have to pause it. And we'd start again.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would just freeze. It was so frustrating. Now, you imagine that happening while you're busy editing something's genes.
Oh, jeez.
You don't want that. So it's not a perfect science yet, but the possibilities are absolutely endless. You could program your child to be exactly what you'd want it to be. The danger is, obviously, you're messing with evolution.
Okay.
We can mess with everything else.
Yeah. You are directing the course of...
We've messed with everything else. Chop, chop, and the woolly mammoth. Let's go.
Yeah, but already, you know, we're ruining the planet. That's messing to a certain extent with evolution. So why not make sure that your child is tall and has brown eyes, if that's what you so wish?
I don't know. This stuff is just amazing to me. And we're getting to a point as humans where there is so much of it happening around us so fast. It's hard to keep up.
How do you spell CRISPR?
CRISPR.
SPR.
Yeah. It's short for...
Whoa. Clustered, regularly interspaced, short, pair, Leandromic?
Palindromic.
Palindromic repeat. CRISPR.
Well done, Sia.
Thank you.
You got through it.
Yeah, if you had to look at the sequences they're talking about, it would basically be like Morse code. It's a short piece, long piece, long piece, short piece, long piece. And you'll find this in bananas, in chimpanzees, in us.
Is it true that we're similar to bananas?
Yeah, they always say that it's about 50 to 60% of our DNA. I don't know if I'm getting the number right, but it's somewhere around there.
We are just so basic.
It's the same as bananas.
We are so basic.
Well, you can see it when some idiot policeman is meant to go and investigate a case where a school child has been abused by the Scholar Patrol dude, and then he ends up being an abuser as well. I mean, that proves we're related to bananas, doesn't it? That just proves that we're so fucking primitive. So, I mean, we're dealing with this amazing world where we've got discoveries about ourselves that were just impossible for any human in history to know. And we're advancing and we're able to genetically engineer. And at that end, the improvements are so incredible that it makes you proud to be human and you almost feel inferior to the great minds that are busy figuring this stuff out. And then on the other side, you've got this asshole who goes to investigate this situation at a school and ends up abusing a 7-year-old himself. And you think, we'll be dragging our knuckles for another couple of thousand years. And in between is the rest of us. You know, between the knuckle-dragging pederast who has no idea of how to behave in a civilized, sophisticated society, and then these geniuses like Stephen Hawking. And somewhere in the middle is the rest of us.
Yeah, Woolly Mammoth would know what to do with a pedophile. Just
crunch
squash
it.
Him.
Yeah.
Sit on his face.
Just finished.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, maybe attack his genitals first and then sit on his face.
Well, they've got those big...
I don't know if tests. Mammoths are so... I don't know if they... Because they don't have fingers and opposable thumbs.
Well,
they can't be a specific... Yeah, but to go for the genitals, you'd need a very good aim. And a woolly mammoth, the reason they didn't survive...
We are engineering them. We're going to engineer them with this amazing ability to poke out a genital.
Yeah, didn't they have those big horns? They could gouge at the genital area with the horn.
So part of the coding is the fact that those tusks just zero in on genitals.
Yes.
First, before the stamping.
All right, you're asking for very particular kind
of engineering.
If we're going to run, I think
there are better ways to deal with pedophiles. And mammoths, but I agree with you.
Yeah, like I said yesterday, forbid them from some supermarkets. That'll teach them.
I think that's a very good idea. You make it hard for them to live, you know?
Yeah, just like basic things. You want to go watch a movie? Not having you in the dark. You get out of here.
Uh-huh. So you'd have to present some kind of card, and if it says pedophile on it, you can't go to the movies.
Well, yeah, you'd obviously bring in the traffic department too, so when they get a driver's license, there's a particular chip they don't know about. Because you have to keep a driver's license on you.
Ah.
And then they're like, oh, I'm being isolated. Someone knows something about me.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I wonder what our ratings would be.
But again, we'd rely on government to make this happen, and they can't even make SANREL work. So let's not go there. All right, loads of stuff to get to. Justice Malala's popping by a bit later on. Let me remind you, Bumin Hlapo is here with Disrupt. And you can find out more about automation with robots. He chats to Reveals Group CEO, Mr. Ian Crouch, about fantastic automation processes through software-based robots and how we can apply human capacity once they perform repetitive linear tasks. You see, this again. I read such a great article the other day about how humans, we've just got to accept that ultimately technology is going to mean the loss of unskilled labor jobs.
Of course. Great.
But I heard that the reason that we haven't given the okay, because Jeff Radebe the other day, the new Minister of Energy, Jeff Radebe says, Eskom, sign these deals which will allow private renewable energy companies to start making energy. Because the only thing stopping them at the moment is legislation. They're not allowed to.
That's what you want to do. You want to... Right. Get everyone contributing to the grid.
So all of us go, woo! Jeff Radebe! Woo-hoo! Someone's finally making... Because this has been sitting for 7 years. Minister of Energy sitting on their hands, waiting for something to happen. So he signs it. But just as he signs it, NUMSA, the National Union of Mine Workers or Metal Workers, one of the two, says, and they get an urgent court interdict to stop this. Why? because they're worried about coal jobs in Mpumalanga. This is where modernity meets technology. I mean, meets basic survival.
Victory.
So, well, also survival stuff for a lot of people. This is where we've got to remember that everything's a compromise. You're not Stephen Hawking and you're not the pedophile Scholar Patrol investigator. You're somewhere in between. And so you've got to take a little bit of both. So now suddenly we have to worry about coal jobs, and this is exactly what people criticize Trump about, because he said we've got to keep those people who work in coal working. We can't just focus on renewable energy, like a lot of people in California want him to do. You've got to do a bit of both. Because if these people without coal jobs, if they have coal jobs now and they lose them suddenly, that's a massive, massive weight put on your economy.
Yeah, but renewable energy brings a lot more opportunity in the long run.
Yeah, and a couple of hundred jobs, even a couple of thousand jobs. But what happens to those people who worked in a coal mine? They don't have anywhere else they can make themselves useful.
Renewable energy.
No, they can't. Because renewable energy people have a different skill set to coal mining energy people. So it's not like you could just transfer them. So suddenly they don't have money. Suddenly they don't have a means to feed their families. Suddenly they're on their backsides getting welfare, like another 17 million of us.
Yeah, but isn't one of the things, if you work on renewable energy, you've got to employ a certain amount of local people, like all construction or any other kind of jobs, and they can be upskilled?
You need to have, I mean, for renewable energy, you need people who can build those massive wind vanes, you need people who can build solar panels, you need people who can figure out new hydroelectric power schemes. These are not people who work in coal. It's not just unskilled labor. So it's a different kind of work. Mm-hmm. If you are good at chopping coal out of a mine, there are not a lot of other things that you can necessarily do. Certainly if they decide to throw out the coal miners, which they're not, by the way, they're thinking of a compromise. But this is where progress is halted. Because now suddenly, okay, well, we can't go into renewables fully because we've got to pull these people with us. The slower end of that economy needs to be picked up and dragged into the future. It's frustrating, right? You imagine how Jeff Radebe feels. He's like, I'm going to get this done. I'm going to do what no other Minister of Energy could do. Ha! Let's sign these forms. Bring it on! And he's signing them and everything's going well, and then suddenly, beep, 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 stop. That's frustrating. All right, I've been talking a long time. Let's get to MUBS. Let's see what the five things are you need to know today.
Okay, white farmers, pack a bag because you are going to Australia. Woohoo!
What?
Australia's Minister for Immigration and Border Protection, Peter Dutton, is making headlines after reportedly saying that his department is considering fast-tracking the visas of white South African farmers who are looking to emigrate because, according to him, the group deserves special attention owing to the horrific circumstances that they are facing in the country. Dutton said that if you look at the footage and read the stories and you hear the accounts of what white farmers are going through, it is horrific. And he says that from what he's seen, they need help from a civilized country like Australia.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard what Thabo Mbeki said a while ago about land. I'll play that clip for you just now. That'll wake you up. And then I saw quite a civilized discussion in Parliament yesterday. When I say so. Well, because Cyril Ramaphosa is not, you can't just heckle and boo him. There's a kind of respectability being brought back to Parliament, which is sort of sidelining the EFF, because if they start shouting and screaming, everybody in Parliament just ignores them now. Whereas before, shouting and screaming was the only way to get through to President Zuma. Now we've got people who are actually listening to each other a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's a massive improvement, but a little bit more. So I watched maybe 5 minutes of it, and then I got bored. But it seemed to me that everyone was being quite respectful. I saw Julius speaking in very soft tones, which he doesn't usually do. And I saw the president's response. And he was very subdued as well and respectful and, you know, took in what people were saying. It was a proper debate like you're meant to have in Parliament. We haven't seen those for such a long time that we thought it was a circus or a zoo. And it's returned to what it's meant to be, which is not a circus or a zoo. It's a place where people can debate things and decide on what we need to do as a country. That's what Parliament's there for, make laws that make sense. So there's a lot that still has to happen here, and this land thing is far from being resolved.
But it is, it's one of those things, like, what else do these farmers do? I mean, nobody ever wants to move to Australia in their own accord. And we can all work that out. I think it was Rahman from the Renegade Report said basically it's a prison for white people, just with open air. But, like, what else do these farmers do? I mean, like, we've seen all these massacre stories. They don't make the news because they're not part of the agenda. But just imagine, like, you know, you've got nothing. You've got nothing around you. You've got no real hope. What are you going to do? You're going to move to a city and get a job? Like, talking about coal miners not having the skills to go elsewhere. These farmers are farmers.
When these attacks happen, doesn't everyone on the farm get killed?
No.
Workers included?
No.
Well, a lot of them just get badly tortured, so they've just left.
No, no. We've got to look at the facts here. The fact is it's one of the most dangerous jobs in the world. They've figured out that 1 in 200 farmers gets killed, white farmers in South Africa. So it's a very dangerous job. And no, it's sometimes got nothing to do with the workers. Sometimes the workers are the ones who have perpetrated the activity. Sometimes it's got nothing to do with the farmer or the worker, and it's just opportunistic crime because these people are very isolated. You don't know, but it's a dangerous, dangerous job. So I don't want to get into a discussion around whether or not these guys have. And, you know, it's so easy in this country to polarize things around white and black. The fact is, farming is not an easy profession. We've got this obsession with agricultural land in this country because of our past, where the farmer owned the land and he was the boss and his workers worked for him like serfs and peasants. And obviously things have changed, and there are a lot of farms in this country that are run very cooperatively. There are places where the workers have a share in what the farm does. There is a massive progress being made, and I don't think anyone pays attention to that stuff because they only still see it in binary.
Yeah.
Owner and workers. Farmers, a lot of farmers are in debt. If you look at what the land bank is owed by farmers in this country, you wouldn't want to take a farm.
Sure.
Because those farmers, what happens is they take out a loan, and then if their crop works, they can pay back the loan. If their crop doesn't come through and they don't harvest enough, they end up owing money. It's not like they've got masses of money. And the only reason they can borrow from the land bank is because they supposedly have the title deeds for the land. So you disrupt that system, there's going to be no food. And then we end up in a Zim situation. I hate this comparison because it's always a default for, you know, whinging white people who don't really know the facts. They go, but it's going the way of Zimbabwe. But the fact is that Zimbabwe, not so long ago, had nothing on the shelves and people were starving. It's not. This is in living memory. And what happened was those farmers were given land and space to operate in Zambia, where they're thriving now. And look at what's happening in Zambia, if you want a situation to compare South Africa to, where it comes to good and bad decisions around agricultural land. Let's not hop on this bandwagon. And the Australians, I don't know whether they're... why are they muscling in on this?
Well, because... according to Ben, it's what? The prison for what? White people?
White people, yeah.
It's not my life.
I don't know. Australians feel responsible for white South Africans, I guess.
No, well, look, to a certain degree, people obviously applied for that kind of stuff. It takes two. I mean, Australia want to be seen as this sort of place where people can feel safe and content and all that kind of stuff, and people maybe want to go there. Some people who feel they don't have a choice. Like I said, I don't think Australia is someone's first choice.
Listen.
You can watch MasterChef all you want.
There's space on earth for everybody. If South Africa does turn out to be a place which is completely inhospitable to white farmers, then they must find another place to go, and sometimes these countries offer an alternative for them. I don't know. I mean, obviously, we'd prefer everyone in this country to have their place in the sun.
But that's just it. To know that anyone, white, black, whatever it is, feel like they don't have a place in the country, it feels like it goes against the Constitution, it goes against what we're trying to do, which does suck a bit.
All right.
Let's move on. What else?
Okay. The South African Institute of Race Relations has reported a 39% decline in new HIV infections.
That's good.
Well, it is good. The Institute says that it is on track in fighting against HIV and AIDS because there are approximately 36 million people living with HIV at the end of 2016, and that number has now declined by 39%.
Very good news.
Yeah. And then Former President Jacob Zuma apparently is going to know any day from today whether or not he will be facing prosecution on fraud and corruption charges. The NPA spokesperson wouldn't commit to a firm date when Sean Abrams would tell the public his decision, saying that the parties involved in the case should be informed first. But word coming out from the from that side of the world saying, well, any day from today, the country will start to know whether or not Zuma is going to face all those charges.
Well, TikTok, I mean, why were you taking so long in the first place, Sean? And you certainly found your spine as soon as Cyril became president and you had a new boss. Yeah, he's exactly the kind of person who, what I call a slave mentality, like he only does what his boss, what he thinks his boss wants him to do. He's got no ability to be an individual with agency. He's just a scared little boy who's going to cling to the coattails of whatever daddy tells him to do. It's so pathetic. I mean, how can people like this still exist in a society where we call ourselves free? Freedom? No one's giving you freedom, Sean. You got to take it, dude. How about you stand up on your own 2 feet and stand for something? Because if you don't stand for something, you will fall for everything.
Oh, preach. Ain't that the truth?
Piece of crap. He's really, I mean, what reputation he's got left is in tatters. The sooner we can get rid of him at the NPA, the better. Replace him with someone who knows what they're doing. Someone who's fearless. Someone who will go after bad guys. There's so many bad guys in this country.
Yeah, and also just less distracting eyebrows. I mean, I know that's a wish, but I mean...
Yeah, his eyebrows remind me of the way that a lot of women's eyebrows get made up these days to look like caterpillars are crawling on their
really?
Face. Yo.
You know those women who have them drawn on?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what he looks like.
That's the trend of the moment.
It's true.
It's very disturbing.
All right.
All right, and then lastly, unfortunately, still no new developments to come out of the triathlete Mhlengi Gwala case.
Yo.
Because police in Durban saying that they're no closer to catching the gang that were responsible for that gruesome attack that he suffered.
Sure.
But his manager, Dennis Jackson, surmised that Gwala had not been the victim of just an everyday robbery. He says, I don't think this was an attempted robbery. If it was, it would have played out completely differently. There is something deeper at play here. And he says, that is why I am so keen for the police to catch these guys.
Exactly, like who?
So that they can get some closure.
Who's just carrying a chainsaw on a road?
I mean, unless you're on the set of a horror movie, nobody is carrying a chainsaw
unless
on the road.
Unless they literally just stole a chainsaw, and then it's like, well, let's see what that guy's got in his pockets.
Yeah.
There's something more here.
There is something more. That's what his manager says.
Don't expect Sean Abrahams to find out what it is.
Well, that chainsaw could be a number on those eyebrows, though.
Yeah. All right. You want to look at... Oh, my God. Do we have to look at cryptocurrency? It's like the worst. Jesus. I remember yesterday I said Run was talking about the bottom. Has it reached a bottom? Well, no. Because today's the bottom. You want to hear what the low point is?
Oof. Yeah.
If you've owned or currently own any cryptocurrency, get ready to... I think this is the lowest point since certainly December.
It's down 22% this week.
So Bitcoin is currently trading at $7,896.84.
And Ethereum, should we just say not much, rather than giving the actual amount?
Oh.
$588.67. I don't know about you. I bought over $1,000. That means half my value right now. Monero, $199 from somewhere in the 500s. That's a joke. You got to get Run in here. I'm slowly falling out of love with this. It's like betting on Steinhoff. Well, okay, it's not that bad, but it's certainly not great. So that's a look at crypto. Let's go to Ben and find out what's happening in the world of sport. Ben, what do you have? By the way, you got to go and see Ben's video, the one that I finally got to watch last night. Because chances are you don't have his terrible machine, and you'll actually be able to watch it from beginning to end.
Yeah, once on YouTube, you're fine.
He made some great videos from his trip at Fancourt, and you can go and see them. Go and
Follow the bounce.
Follow the bounce.
On YouTube. Thank you, Gareth.
Yes.
I recommend it wholeheartedly.
Well, it's yours, of course. You should.
So, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but those pricks at SASCOC You know they're terrible. I mean, when have we had a story where, oh, and Sascock are doing this, and we all go, yay? No, it's never happened.
When have any athletes even said, wow, we love Sascock, they're doing so much for us?
Well, Gareth, okay, thank you for sort of praising what I was going to get into. So there's the Zulman Inquiry at the moment, basically going into irregular expenditures and all kinds of skullduggery from Sascock. So a variety of things are being probed. Gideon Sam was asked yesterday about his daily travel allowance. Now, we've all been overseas on trips from time to time or wherever we've been in this country, and you know you have a travel allowance to get through what you need to do. Gideon Sam gets 6,000 Rand a day. What are you doing with 6,000 Rand a day once you're in a place? And don't tell me exchange rate, euros, dollars, pounds, whatever. 6,000 Rand. Does this guy get a daily dance? Like, is he getting a daily... Like where is he eating?
6,000 Rand. He gets 6,000 Rand a day?
So he was questioned about this. You know, is this not a bit much? And his words were, that's small money. The Sascog board must not suffer for the good of African sport. A man in charge of sport said that yesterday in front of a commission.
I mean, that's like Marie Antoinette saying, let these poor people have cake.
That's small. 6,
no, it's worse. It's like Marie Antoinette saying, I deserve all this gold, peasants.
Yes.
That's what it's like.
And be happy. That's small money. Well, pay it yourself then, you prick. That's small. 6,000. You know what 6,000 Rand does for an athlete every single day?
A day.
You know what 6,000 Rand can do for an athlete a month? That's... Imagine you're so detached from your role.
I'm trying to work this out.
That you can say that's small money. Over 2.2 million Rand paid in board allowances each year. So that's just some of the small money. Thanks for that, Wesley Button.
He gets 135,000 Rand a month if you just do 5 days a week.
And he's just go on travel and stuff.
Jesus.
But that's small money. But yeah, why are these pricks in this job for life? That's another thing I really want to find out. Unfortunately, Graham Joffe had to leave the country for whatever reason that people never quite know, and like depending on whose side of the coin you're on there. But he was always saying these guys are a bunch of dicks. But they got these lifetime jobs. Gideon Sam. What a, if you see Gideon Sam today, you know, kick him in the shins. Or higher. It's up to you. Depends how tall you are, I guess. Last night, Champions League. Well, Chelsea, they were really excited about playing Barcelona. Well, until about 2 minutes in. Lionel Messi scored a goal, and he scored another goal. And before you knew it, well, 3-0. Chelsea are out of the Champions League. And that's that. They're gone. So, Antonio Conte, who will start losing his hair gradually from here, said that basically Messi was the difference between the two sides. He scored the goal in the first leg, and then he scored the two in the second leg. And with that, Messi does join Ronaldo in the 100 club of scoring 100 Champions League goals. But yeah, it's tough times for Chelsea because now they have to finish in the top four, guaranteed, to try to get back into Champions League next year. That's not looking so good. It really isn't because Liverpool are doing well. Man City are going to win the title soon. Man United are doing all right. And then you've got Spurs, even without Harry Kane. So tough times for Antonio Conte.
Right.
Like him. And then the Besiktas. I know you're all wondering what happened with the Besiktas last night.
We all do.
Well, Gareth, didn't go well. They had a mountain decline. They really did. They were 5-0 down. And then at home, they lost 3-1 to Bayern Munich. So they lose 8-1 on aggregate. Yeah. Just the aggregate score for that one. Barcelona go through 4-1 on aggregate. So who are the teams that go through? Well, it's very exciting because now we're down to the final eight. Now, these are the best teams in all of Europe. And they will be Barcelona, Real Madrid, Juventus, Liverpool, Man City, Roma, Sevilla, and Bayern Munich. So the draw will take place Friday. That'll be tomorrow. And yeah, we'll comment on all that kind of stuff next week. We got back to Super Rugby. And well, first on Rugby, Rassie Erasmus is doing something that's great for his PR. He's consulting with former BOC coaches about the challenges that they've received in the job. Rassie, save yourself the time, bud. Basically, sorry are a bunch of pricks, and they always marginalize these coaches. But you've got sorry in your back pocket, so you'll be okay. There we go. I just saved you an entire day. Flights, accommodation, finger food, and drinks. All in 10 seconds. Move on. But into the actual Super Rugby. I need less screens. That's what I really need to do. International Super Rugby for the weekend. Chiefs versus the Bulls. Now, the Bulls have got that crap defeatist cliched attitude like, oh, we've got nothing to lose. And that's what they're saying, basically. So they'll take on the Chiefs. And yes, they probably will lose. But at least go there with some self-respect. I mean, you're a professional rugby player. Go and do whatever you can at the Stadium Waikato. That'll be Friday, 8:35. Saturday, 8:35. Highlanders versus the Crusaders. Another great match there. Crusaders lost last week, and now they take on the Highlanders away in the Greenhouse Stadium. Very big game. The Brumbies will be boring the Sharks, and probably vice versa, at quarter to 11 on Saturday. Then the Stormers. Well, these guys, they can't catch a break. They've got the usual knee injuries, because something happens in their training camps, which means knee injuries. But they've also been ravaged by flu this week. I can't support this team anymore. It's just too heartbreaking. Seriously, it's just too heartbreaking. The Stormers versus the Blues in Newlands on Saturday, if you care, 3:05. Then the Lions take on the Sun Wolves in a cricket score waiting to happen at 5:15. And then the Hakawadeth will take on the Reds at 12:40. And the final game of the weekend will be the Waratahs taking on the Rebels at 7:05 Sunday morning. In other rugby news, Eddie Jones, well, everyone thought he was the darling of English rugby. Well, you know what happens after you lose two matches? Darling's not quite the word you use. Dick is probably closer to the truth. And now it has surfaced that some old things that he said about Ireland and Wales have come back to bite him in the arse. So he's apologized for a video that has emerged where he basically referred to Wales as a shit place and Irish as scummy. He said the Irish people are scummy.
Doesn't everyone think that?
Yeah, you can't really say it if you're the coach of England. It's frowned upon. That's the problem. You know, people want to be big deals in life, but when you become famous, when you be a big deal, and all the other things, and you want to be in movies, you can't say things like Irish people are scummy, or Welsh people are living in a shit place. But speaking of the scummy Irish, they'll be taking on the English as the Six Nations champions already. This will take place on Saturday. Ireland, of course, looking to win the Grand Slam. And if they beat England at Twickenham, well, Eddie Jones will be pissed off. Plus, they'll win the Grand Slam. Very exciting. Kakisa Rabada has appealed his two-match ban. He's basically said, screw this, that Steve Smith's a pussy. I did not hurt him. Let's just get back in the game here. So he's got his lawyers together. Well, Cricket South Africa obviously got the lawyers together. And the Incompetent Cricket Council have to now appoint an independent judge on the matter. So we all know that Jeff Crow, Jeff Crow, what a prick. He found Rabada to be man of malicious intent as he brushed shoulders with Smith. So he's been given the skip on this thing. So, yeah, it'll take place in the next 7 days. There's a bit of a gap now. The 22nd is the next test in Cape Town. And if Rabada gets his ban lifted, he could play in that. But this is the kicker, right? Even if he is seen to not be guilty of malicious intent, bodily harm, whatever Steve Smith wants to call it, he's had prior wrongdoings. So that will come back to haunt him, unfortunately. So I'm not really optimistic about this. It would be great to see Rabada back, but I don't see the lawyers being able to overturn this that much, unless the ICC grow a pair of balls. But I think there's more chance of that happening to my buddy right now in studio in the next 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
Maybe, Gareth, but you know what? I think that's enough today. Today on the Bounce Show. Today on the Bounce Show, right here, clipcentral.com, 10 a.m. live South African time. Tando Rotto, he is one of SA's fastest sprinters. Him and his coach Henny Creel.
They call him the Rocket.
The Rock.
The Rock.
Yeah. So it's going to be, if you love athletics, you love sprinting, you love how one of the huge emerging sports happening in SA right now. I have the two of them in studio along with Ray Wixel, and the four of us have a fantastic chat around athletics, sprinting, and the future of our bright young stars.
Brilliant. That's all coming up on the Bounce Show this morning. Cliffcentral.com, or download the podcast and listen whenever you want. That's right, because that's a nice thing about podcasts, is you can listen when it suits you. Da, 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 da. Here's Sia with Said by Sia. People loved your joke yesterday.
It was classic.
Pardon?
What was your joke?
What does a sassy horse eat?
What does it eat, Ben?
Hey.
Right. Well, you can go and see the video of that on my Instagram. All right, so go on. Breathy. Get on with it.
How do you know you'd be eaten by a gay shark?
I don't...
Da-da, 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 da-da.
All right, it gets better and better. God knows where we'll end up tomorrow. Sia, what do you got?
Damn it, those shoulders doing the shimmy bend just made it all the more better. This morning for Said by Sia. So we've unfortunately had to discuss news stories like the school in Soweto and the students that were abused there. So have you heard of the Teddy Bear Clinic?
Yes, of course.
Who do great work in the courts.
They're a child advocacy group, and They help kids who have to testify in courtrooms. Mm. They have help kids who've been through traumatic situations and who are asked to be witnesses in situations. It's hard work. It's backbreaking. Just awful, 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 mm. depressing stuff for many people. But these guys, they do it, and they help so many kids.
Exactly. And so this morning for Set by Say, I just wanted to shine a light on them, because in light of all of this negativity, they've gone a step forward even more and are doing actually quite groundbreaking work in South Africa. So the Teddy Bear Clinic have now introduced a new court preparation program by using dogs to help abused children give evidence in court. And through using canine therapy, it actually comforts these kids through the entire ordeal of going through court. So when you look at the South African criminal justice system, it can be a harsh place to navigate as a child, especially if the child has to face their abuser in court. And one of the clinical directors at the Teddy Bear Clinic, Dr. Shahida Omar, actually says that the courtroom can induce secondary trauma for child abuse victims. So that's why they have now launched their new canine therapy program. So through this, the support given by a dog actually helps ease the child, ease their fears, their anxiety as well. So each support dog has a handler that is trained to assist with the psychological needs of the children. And I think this is awesome. The dogs come from an organization called Top Dogs, which specializes in therapy dogs. Connor Hughes from the Top Dogs organization says that dogs can have a calming and therapeutic influence on children. The dogs are taken to various people in need, from the elderly even, to special needs children, as well as offering support to children in court. So having the dogs there creates this feeling of security and control and even happiness for some children. And I think this is awesome work that the Teddy Bear Clinic is doing. Lord knows that, you know, we definitely need it in these times. So I think it's incredible that they're making this extra effort just upon all of the hard work that they're doing on a daily basis. So this morning on Said by Sia, I really wanted to highlight what the Teddy Bear Clinic is doing. I think it's great.
Very nice. Thank you, Sia. Hey, you know what else is very nice? Is our new Cliff Central unwired earphones. I know I keep bleating on about this, but we got a great review in Stuff Magazine, so don't take my word for it. Take theirs. It gave us a 7.9 out of 10.
Where's that?
I know.
2.1.
Isn't that frustrating? It's like when you almost get an A at school, but then they don't
give
you the A.
Where is it? What
happened? This teacher doesn't like me. But anyway, they said some very nice things. And even the things that they said that were critical, I thought were very, very valid. But they did say that at that price, you're going to get a pair of earphones that are stellar. I'm not going to misquote them or paraphrase them. Go and see it. It's all on Stuff, and you can find that online. You can look them up on their social media too, Stuff Magazine. I actually retweeted it just the other day, so even if you look at my timeline, you'll be able to find it. In fact, it was 2 days ago. So I've only tweeted about 3 times in the last 2 days, so go and have a look. It's right there. It's easy to follow. And then decide, based on their review, third party, whether or not you like them. And if you do like them, buy a pair. Buy one for someone who's got a birthday coming up. Let's see how that goes. Very, very cool. And, you know, a lot of people buy gadgets. A lot of electronic stuff gets sold online now. Very few people go into stores compared to, you know, 5 years ago to buy these kinds of things, because you know you're going to get the product. You know it's going to be quality. You don't have to hold it in your hand. And you can see all the specs online. So a lot of people want to go straight to Takealot, and they're available there as well. You can go to cliffcentral.com and go and have a look. 550 Rand a pair, and you won't look back. I saw Jane was wearing hers around the office yesterday. And you charge them, and they last 10 hours. As long as you don't leave them on. And to switch them off, you just click the back of them together. They've got magnets, and then when those magnets come together, they switch off. So it saves battery power. And then when you use them again, they switch back on. It's terrific. It's meant to make life easier for you. And if you're a regular podcast listener, then this is the kind of thing that you probably need. For all those times where you want to listen, but there's stuff going on around you, and you just pop one in to one ear and maybe don't put it on the other ear. Whatever you prefer. It's all there. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. When we come back, the burning platform with Justice Malala, and we will find out from Mubs what else is in the news. We'll take your calls and your thoughts and your WhatsApps and all the rest of it. WhatsApp number is 0797482090. And if you want to call us, 0861-555-189. All right. Let's do a little old school for this morning.
Oh, how old school. Damn.
This is CliffCentral.com.